Welcome to the Mindful Medicina Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show. For years, alternative medicine and natural products have been under attack by the FDA and other three-letter alphabet agencies, such as the Federal Trade Commission, that advocate for conventional medicine to the exclusion of all other medicines, including, but not limited to, sun exposure, sleep hygiene, movement, nutrition, and in this case, supplements. During the COVID pandemic, these very same three-letter groups made it clear through cancel culture, censoring, and pulling products like N-acetylcysteine off of the market in order to justify an emergency use authorization of their shots, which would allow the pharmaceutical companies to use these drugs without approval by the FDA for safety and efficacy. And to that, through the PREP Act, they wouldn't even be liable for any injuries or deaths that ensued as a result of these illegal loopholes. But in order for the pharmaceutical companies to qualify for this EUA approval to put shots into the arms all around the world, they would have to prove there were no alternatives to the crisis they created. Today's guest, Nathan Jones, CEO of Clear, that's X-L-E-A-R, is here to share with us the benefits of xylitol in dentistry and upper respiratory infections, and to that, his attempt to get the FDA to approve the use of xylitol as an option for preventing adhesion of the microbes into the airways during the pandemic that ultimately would land him in a big court battle with the Federal Trade Commission instead. Nathan is on a mission to preserve the right to use effective and well-studied alternative medicines. From where I stand, as both doctor and patient, I believe it is imperative that we never allow Big Pharma to have the monopoly on medicine. Today we have Nathan Jones, founder of Clear, that's X-L-E-A-R, who is the founder of the Clear products that are based out of the xylitol substance. And we wanted to go into a deep dive on xylitol to start with because we've been doing a bunch of oral hygiene episodes. And so we thought this would be a great episode to piggyback off of. And then also to go into the politics around suppressing natural medicine, especially since 2020. And Nate will be giving us some insight as to what he's contending with the Federal Trade Commission, trying to hush him on his products and how that unfolded during COVID. So welcome, Nathan. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. And then, you know, I hope it's a pleasure and I hope it's enjoyable.
Yeah. Thanks, Nate.
Awesome. Okay. Nathan, tell us a little bit about the history of basically this would be what your dad had created, who's a doctor, and give us a little background into how this company started, Clear.
Well, the company started in 2000 and it started because my dad is a physician. And in the late 1990s, he was having a bunch of kids in his practice with his recurrent ear infections, recurrent otitis media. And when he went on PubMed, because if you remember, most of us are too young to remember, but PubMed came online in 1998, the first part of 98. And that was the first time that medical journals and dental journals were collated and searchable amongst. So both of them, you know, you'd go into a query and it would search all of them. And when he put in a query for searching for something to prevent ear infections, what kept coming up were dental research studies. And the interesting part of that is that when they've been doing all of this research with xylitol, looking how it prevents tooth decay, going back to the late 60s, they'd noticed that the kids that used the xylitol gum in these studies, not only were they not getting tooth decay as much, they were also getting 42% fewer respiratory infections just by chewing the gum. Mm-hmm. The dental researchers weren't that interested in it because they were interested in the mouth. And so nothing was ever done with that. And in 1998, there was an article or a study that was published in the Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy where they showed that the reason why this reduction was happening was because the xylitol was binding up on receptor sites, making it so that the strep pneumo, the H flu, and the MCAT, the three, you know, most pathogenic bacteria, it was blocking their ability to adhere to the tissue. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were getting 42% fewer respiratory infections in these kids. Well, obviously, you can't give chewing gum to an infant. And these were the kids that my dad was really looking for. And so he started mixing up xylitol. I mean, he went down to the health food store and bought some xylitol, and he would open up a bottle of saline, ocean saline, and he'd pour a teaspoon or a tablespoon of xylitol into it and shake it all up. And they started squirting up the nose of these kids. And these kids stopped getting sick. It wasn't like, you know, a 20% or a 30 or a 40. It was actually, they just stopped getting sick. And a lot of kids who have issues with recurrent ear infections or recurrent respiratory infections also have issues with allergies and asthma and stuff like that. And a lot of these kids, within a couple of weeks, all of that had cleared up also.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't have any idea what to make of it. There was an article that came out significantly later, probably 15 years later, that was written by a Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And what he pointed out is that the same way that dentists and hygienists understand plaque in your mouth is a biofilm.
Right.
We have these biofilms all over our body. And what's happening is you get one of these biofilms in your airway and the bacteria are living in this biofilm, bacteria and viruses. And as long as they're in the biofilm, they're not making you sick. But once a chunk of that falls off and the bacteria become planktonic, you start getting sick. And then they treat it with antibiotics. You kill all the planktonic bacteria. You're not affecting the ones in the biofilm. And you get healthy. And then another chunk falls off and you get sick again. And that's how you have these recurrent respiratory illnesses. Well, the xylitol breaks those biofilms up. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the same way it does it, they've shown, I mean, decades of research has shown how it does it in the mouth with plaque, and it does it the same way in the upper airway. There are studies coming out of University of Montana. I know it's in Montana, Billings. So Mary Cloud Ammons was the one that did the studies, but these were published 20 years ago showing that that's what's happening. So anyways, I quit my job. I used to do underwater welding, underwater construction out in the Gulf of Mexico. And I quit my job in early 2000, and started this company in June of 2000. And here we are today.
Wow. Yeah. So this started off with your dad's brilliance. That's amazing. I actually heard him speak with you on the Alex Jones show. And he sounds like a really, really amazing empathic physician, something that I think we need to incorporate more in medicine these days, as opposed to the profit over people paradigm. So thank you to your dad.
Yeah, and apparently looks so young that Alex Jones thinks he could beat y'all up.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about where does xylitol come from? How do we find that in nature? And what is the biochemistry makeup of that?
Well, it's a simple sugar. I mean, we're all familiar with sucrose, glucose, fructose, sorbitol, mannitol, maltitol. All of those are 6-carbon sugars and sugar alcohols. Xylitol is just 1 carbon less. It's a 5-carbon sugar. Mm-hmm. And where it comes from in nature is everywhere. It's one of the most common sugars that there is in nature. The cell walls, plants have cell walls, animals have cell membranes. the cell walls are made up of these long chain polysaccharides, and xylitol is one of the most common one of those polysaccharides that make up cell walls. So all the time that you're eating high fiber products, your body's going to probably break those down and make, you know, short sugars out of them. And so those are all considered good prebiotics, which xylitol is a great prebiotic for your gut, for mm-hmm. your oral microbiome, for your nasal microbiome. But you can get it out of sugar cane. I mean, after they take all the sap out and get the 6-carbon sugars, you can take the residue fiber and get xylitol out of that. But for most commercial purposes, they actually make it out of corn cobs, not the corn itself, but the cob.
Right.
And the next time you eat corn on the cob, mm-hmm. take the cob when you're done and break it in half and suck on it. It's going to be sweet.
Wow.
And that's xylitol.
That's cool. Yeah. My brother and I used to love doing that.
Yeah.
So
about 40% of the dry weight of a corn cob is xylitol.
Wow.
It's unbelievable where xylitol is everywhere and you never hear about it, mm-hmm. actually. And so as a acting prebiotic, we know that the people that will have a little bit of a difficult time processing it would be people with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth because of the fructooligosaccharide content in it. Sort of causing someone to possibly be bloated, but otherwise it's a non-toxic, natural substance in nature.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back even 300 years, it was probably for the vast majority of people on the planet, the number one sugar that we consumed, which xylitol is a great prebiotic for your gut, for mm-hmm. your oral microbiome, for your nasal microbiome, but you can get it out of sugar cane. I mean, after they take all the sap out and get the 6-carbon sugars, you can take the residue fiber and get xylitol out of that. But for most commercial purposes, they actually make it out of corn cobs, not the corn itself, but the cob.
Right.
And the next time you eat corn on the cob, mm-hmm. take the cob when you're done and break it in half and suck on it. It's going to be sweet.
Wow.
And that's xylitol.
That's cool. Yeah. My brother and I used to love doing that.
Yeah.
So
about 40% of the dry weight of a corn cob is xylitol.
Wow. It's unbelievable where xylitol is everywhere and you never hear about it, mm-hmm. actually. And so as a acting prebiotic, we know that the people that will have a little bit of a difficult time processing it would be people with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth because of the fructooligosaccharide content in it, sort of causing someone to possibly be bloated. But otherwise, it's a non-toxic, natural substance in nature.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back even 300 years, it was probably for the vast majority of people on the planet, the number one sugar that we consumed. Simply before we started refining 6-carbon sugars, mm-hmm. we ate plant material around the year, and that plant material was mostly comprised of xylitol.
So as a doctor that does a lot of IV nutritional therapy, I was surprised to find that we actually used to give xylitol in IV form as a food source, and now we're using dextrose. So I found, wow, really, we used to put this in IVs. That's amazing.
Well, I understand why they would use xylitol, because if it's made with xylitol or even, well, you don't get any nutrition from erythritol, but if you use xylitol, you don't have to check to see if they're diabetic before you hook them up.
Right. Oh. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can take fewer steps. So tell us what bacteria do xylitol control or disrupt the proliferation of?
Well, that's a very big question that I don't know that we know the entire answer of. The ones that we know for sure that it has a very big effect on are the strep bacteria. Strep mutans, when strep mutans tries to eat xylitol, because they do perceive it as a food source, they can't metabolize it. They can metabolize 6-carbon sugars. They can't metabolize 5-carbon sugars. And so it ends up gumming up their metabolic pathways. It ends up killing them but not actively killing them, or it would be called an antibiotic. It actually just starves them to death. So the way that xylitol works in oral care and oral hygiene, and this is really interesting. You know, a couple of weeks ago, they had that whole thing with the court case and fluoride out of California. And as soon as that came out, I got on the phone with a couple of dentists and we were talking about it. And, you know, it's really interesting because the dental industry is a, you know, they really hung their hat on the fluoride. And fluoride doesn't even address the bacterial infection that is strep mutans.
That's right.
We get cavities because the strep mutans eat 6 carbon sugars, metabolizes it, excretes acid. That acid, you know, dissolves their enamel. Mm-hmm. And we've known that for 100 years. It's 100 years ago this year that they, you know, realized that strep mutans is what causes tooth decay. And they continue to this day. I don't know. I'm not aware of any products that you can buy on the market as a consumer that can put the claim on it and say, this is going to help reduce tooth decay other than fluoride.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not aware of any of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yet all the fluoride does, or the hydroxyapatite or trimethylphosphate, we use trimethylphosphate. All of those only work if you get the if you get the pH of your mouth back to a neutral level or above.
Mm-hmm. That's so none hard of them work to do
if you don't mm-hmm. address the bacterial infection. And xylitol is the only thing I know of that safely does that. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, xylitol, erythritol, a couple of these other, you know, 3, 4, and 5 carbon sugars.
Which are sugar alcohols, if you will. So we won't see a change in blood sugar levels.
Yep.
It also seems to be amazing at disrupting the biofilm in the bronchi, the lungs as well. So doing the nasal spray seems to be really effective that way as well.
Yeah. No, it the xylitol also works as a mucolytic. It thins out the mucus so that the cilia, you know, if you sit there and think about it, you know, your nose and your bronchi, they're all covered with cilia, and that cilia is what sweeps the mucus away. But the xylitol stays in there and it pulls moisture out of the tissue. So it makes that mucus more fluid, so the cilia clean it away a lot better.
This sounds so similar. The mechanism of action of this xylitol sounds so much to me like N-acetylcysteine, as it is a biofilm disruptor and a thinning of the mucus, if you will.
I don't know how it is.
Yeah,
how it works.
It's super similar, which is no surprise to me that Amazon was trying to, well, they did take this off of the market during COVID, because heaven forbid you actually have a biofilm disruptor or anything that was working to prevent the spread and getting it of this COVID, because then you couldn't push for a vaccine under the emergency use authorization, right?
Yeah.
So that,
well,
that,
I'm truly surprised at where our country and our public health has gone in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And to speak to that, you're under the fire, if you will, with the Federal Trade Commission with regard to your efforts to offer preventative medicine, or at least suggest it in the form of xylitol during COVID. And so can you tell us what the research showed as far as xylitol being helpful to prevent virus infection and spread, if you will?
Yeah. So the interesting part of that is it even goes back further than the xylitol part. Because prior to 2020, the CDC had on its website guidance on how to treat a respiratory coronavirus infection. Okay.
Yep.
And all it was use saline. saline irrigation to physically reduce the viral load, wash out as much of the viral as the viral particles as you could, cleaning out the airway, reducing that viral load and burden. And in May of 2020, there was a paper that came out of Vanderbilt University where they looked at people who had COVID, who tested positive, who had symptoms, and they were all over the age of 65. And all 60 of these people just used salt water. Hmm. All of these people were better in under a week. Hmm. All of the companies in this industry then received a letter from the FTC telling us not to share that data.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. Clear received it. NeoMed received it. Navaj received it. They went out to all of us. And we were the only company that was dumb enough to stand up and say, hey, why can't we talk about it? This is published in the medical literature. It's there. It has a long history of safety and efficacy. And the FTC really just said, because we said so.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Because the check cleared.
And we told them to pound sand and use a couple of other expletives. But that was just the saline part. In May of 2020, there was a paper that came out of the University of Tennessee where they were looking at xylitol and iota-carrageenan and looking at how it blocked adhesion of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Mm-hmm. And we had never thought to look at viruses. In, 20 years, we had never even thought to look at viruses. We thought it was just for bacteria. And when this study came out, you could look at the data from the study and you could surmise that if it's going to block it, the virus from adhering to the tissue, it's going to help reduce your chances of getting sick. And we sent all this information to the FDA it would have been the last week of June of 2020. And we got our warning letter from the government a month later telling us not to share any of this data. And of course we told them, no, we're going to keep sharing it. It's published. And, the government, by all its bad decisions, is putting the country through a pandemic. And so we continued to share the data. And as more data came out, we continued to share that data. The interesting thing is that the FTC, their argument for why we couldn't share the data from the University of Tennessee study was because it was done on varicose kidney monkey tissue as opposed to human airway tissue. So we went and redid the study with human airway tissue. Mm-hmm. And what we found was that we did it with RSV, H1N1, rhinoviruses, SARS-CoV-2 of the Delta strain. I'm trying to remember, there's a couple more that we did it with. But different sugars actually blocked different viruses, which was something that was really interesting that we found out. They all block SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-2 is actually an incredibly easy virus to get rid of. Mm-hmm. You just have to do practically anything. Mm-hmm. And our public health agencies during COVID, what did they tell you to do? Wait until you get really, really sick,
right?
Then go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the early treatments, they were poo-pooing and going, no, don't do it. And they criticized everybody that was talking about early treatment. But all of those sugars block the ability of SARS-CoV-2 to adhere to the tissue. Rhinoviruses are actually blocked very effectively with xylitol blocks the RSV. Erythritol blocks the H1N1 very effectively. Xylitol blocks it also, but not nearly as effectively as erythritol. So these different sugar molecules are blocking these different viruses. And that's pretty interesting to me, mm-hmm, maybe mm-hmm. not to other people, but to me. Mm-hmm. And when we went and shared that with the FTC, they said, no, you still can't say it. And we said, why can't we say this? This is exactly what you told us to go say. And now we have a study showing that it blocks RSV. And they said, well, it's okay. You can say it about RSV. Okay. And there's one here showing that it blocks H1N1. Yeah, you can say it about H1N1. And there's one here showing it's SARS-CoV-2. No, you can't say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh.
And at that point, that's when I realized that the FTC had no basis in science. They weren't trying to find anything. This was an agenda that they were trying to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you couldn't have any other alternative
for healing or prevention in order to for the pharmaceutical companies to push for their COVID vaccinations, if you will. So that all of that needed to be hushed. There, you couldn't talk about ivermectin, vitamin C, sunshine, any of the other, quercetin, hydroxychloroquine. The list is exhausted, well, you know?
You know, one of the things that helped prevent COVID, or let me rephrase that, that helped prevent serious COVID was actually toothpaste.
Mm. Tell us about that.
I'm just saying. Because, in early 2020, maybe mid-2020, there were two papers that came out. And if you just do a Google search, you'll find these because they were talked about in the media for about 2 days. But there was a paper that came out of Israel and another one out of Canada. And what they showed is that people who had periodontal disease were eight times more likely to die from COVID than if you didn't have periodontal disease.
Wow. Hmm.
So if you got COVID, you were eight times more likely to be hospitalized and die than if you didn't. And you never, ever heard our dear fearless leader Fauci or Vivek Murthy come out and say, hey, brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use a little bit of mouthwash now and then.
There were so many alternatives to this, and you just got shut down all the time for suggesting anything. And as a naturopathic doctor during this time, we actually had sort of a immune supportive combination that we were offering to our patients. So vitamin A, vitamin D, NAC, which I mentioned before, that's that biofilm disruptor. And there were several other supplements in that goodie bag, if you will. But the point, basically, just to piggyback off what you were saying, is there's an agenda to basically muzzle anyone talking about any other option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't long before they came along and absolutely said that we could not sell those at our clinic. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, you can't even offer that.
They said you couldn't sell them?
No. We couldn't. Well, we could sell those individual products, but we could not package them in something that said this is immune support package. Mm-hmm. Like, we couldn't actually frame it that way.
You couldn't say, oh, well, this is an anti-COVID goodie bag, if you will. So
we were just calling it immune support.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that our public health, and I say this to practically anybody that'll talk to me about it. Everybody wants to see Fauci put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we absolutely 100% need to figure out where COVID came from. Mm-hmm. And I don't disagree with them, but I think that even more important than putting Fauci and figuring out where COVID came from is trying to figure out why Fauci, because he's there too, Francis Collins at the NIH, mm-hmm. Vivek Murthy, and Rochelle Walensky, mm-hmm. why all of these people in public health made 100% of their decisions were the wrong decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everything they told us to do was wrong. Now, if they told us 10 good things and 3 bad things, you know, you could have thought that they were trying to do something right.
Yeah.
But when you're 100% wrong on everything.
Yep.
And again, we know they had the data because we kept trying to give it to them. Mm-hmm. We sent it to the FTC. We sent it to the FDA. We sent it to the CDC. We even got a bunch of doctors and helped them put together a petition asking the CDC to start discussing nasal hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we learned in our lawsuit as we were deposing these government agencies was that at least the people at the FTC, all of the studies that we sent them, they never opened. They never read them.
Yeah.
And their logic was, and I kid you not, this is from their deposition. Their logic was, it wasn't in the news, so it couldn't have been true.
Wow.
Yeah. Ugh. That's where we're at, right?
Yeah.
Where's your source
of
reality?
But that was their logic. So they just never opened the study and read them. They're like, yeah, it can't be true.
It wasn't media science.
It's like a new term.
Ugh. But it's crazy. I mean, one of the other things, and this just tells you about the rampant corruption that's in the bureaucracy is that we also asked these attorneys at the FTC, we said, how long have you been working at the FTC? And they're like 20 years, 21 years, you know. And we asked them, how many times do you recollect that the FTC sent a warning out to an entity and that entity gave them data and the FTC says, oh, yeah, you're good. All good. Sorry. Our bad. And in 21 years, you know how many times that had happened?
Zero.
Zero. Mm-hmm. Which tells you that either the best attorneys in the world that have been batting 1,000 for 21 years work at the FTC, or they're a bunch of bullies.
Right.
That's the only way it works.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's an entire system at play that protects its own, and that's why I applaud you for defending yourself, because you're defending all other naturopathic and alternative measures of healing by going to bat with these guys, which is probably very costly for you, right?
We're into it $3.5 million, almost $4 million.
And isn't that the strategy to bleed? They try to bleed you out. Isn't that part of the game?
It is. That is.
Right.
But I think that it's worth the fight. and I'll tell you, when I decided that it was worth it was when, you know, and I told you about that time when they said, you can say it about RSV, you can say it about H1N1, you just can't say it about SARS-CoV-2. And at that point, I just told the lawyers, I just said, you know what, just let them sue us. They don't know what they're talking about, or they're deliberately trying to hurt American people. It's just one or the other.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
And if you ask me, I believe that they were deliberately trying to hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we feel that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, but you know, being in the dental field, I think that there's a lot of similarities with fluoride and what happened the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And seeing that fluoride is a neurotoxin and they just so arbitrarily decide now we're going to talk about it. There's always some, you know, reason that it suits them to come clean with things, right?
Well, so what do we have to do to get the entire dental industry, the entire dental profession to acknowledge what they learned 100 years ago and that cavity is a hole in the teeth, but the illness can be treated and then you don't get cavities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is one of the, it's heartbreaking, but during COVID, you know, we sell a gum. It's called Spry, S-P-R-Y. You can buy it at practically any health food store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And during COVID, people weren't standing in the checkout line, and so they weren't buying all the gum. Mm. And we had about $1 million worth of gum that was coming short dated. Hadn't it expired yet, and even after it expires, it's good. We went to the public health people here in Utah and asked if we could donate it to them, and they could start a gum chewing program in some of their schools. And this is actually really just how screwed up our public health system is, because we were on the phone and I had a pulmonologist with me and a dentist, and we were talking about the benefits of xylitol and respiratory and all this. And the people in public health, they said, yeah, we know about xylitol. And we said, well, can we start a xylitol gum chewing program in a school? If you pick out the school where the state is funding more restorative care and treatments and dental visits, and we'll donate the gum there and we'll just see how much it reduces the cost of the amount of money that they're spending on this school. And they said, the person told us that she asked the question, she goes, if it works, who's going to pay for the gum in the next year? And we said, well, if it works, the state is going to be saving so much money, it would behoove them to pay for the gum the next year.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, you're talking about $25 worth of gum per year to achieve this goal. And they refused to do it because this person said in her expertise, it was more important to make sure that the state kept the money so they could pay the doctors and the dentists to fix the children than it was to prevent the tooth decay.
That's right. There's more money in treatment than prevention, though. Yeah.
If there's not a leverage of, like, if there's not a reliance upon an outside source, like, if we can do it ourselves, then it's just, it's going to be out of the question.
But why? But the question is, why does public health, I mean, public health should be motivated not to pay the doctors and the dentists.
Right.
They shouldn't even be motivated by making sure that everybody has equal access to healthcare, because that's what their argument was, is we want to make sure everybody has equal access. They should be making sure that everybody has equal access to prevention.
Yeah, especially since it's really kind of, I mean, the amount of money people have to spend, and insurance companies have sometimes crappy plans. It be, like, dental health becomes a class issue. So yeah, if they're so concerned with equal access, then you think that it would lead right back to something like the program that you were, you know, proposing.
Yeah. I mean, again, if kids chew, I mean, you've got multiple studies that show this. If kids chew a piece of gum when they come to school in the morning, a piece of gum after lunch, and a piece of gum before they go home, they reduce their tooth decay to practically nothing. It's not zero, but it's practically nothing.
That's amazing.
They also reduce respiratory infections by 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's $25 a year for all that.
And I think it was just, I was listening to, I don't know if you know this dentist, I would imagine that you do, but Dr. Berheen, he's a really big advocate of chewing, basically chewing gum with xylitol. And he was saying you really only even need to chew the gum for 2 minutes, 3 times a day. And and that's it. It's not like you got to chew on it for 15 minutes and get a sore jaw out of it.
2 to 3 minutes, because all you really got to do is you got to use saliva to flush all the other sugars out of your mouth. And leave the xylitol there so that the bacteria, the strep mutans, the bacteria that cannot metabolize the xylitol, they all start starving and dying off. Most of the other commensals can feed on xylitol.
Yeah, it also is lending to a more alkaline oral cavity as well, which is also, you know, the added benefit there for preventing the cavities.
Yeah. So how do we get the dental profession to really get on board with promoting and actually doing research on ways to treat the bacterial infection as opposed to, you know, 5 different kinds of epoxy or what do they call that stuff they fill cavities with these days?
What do they use?
Porcelain stuff.
Porcelain, that's what it is, porcelain. Yeah, I mean, they're putting a Band-Aid on it. I have a lot of Band-Aids in my mouth myself, so I definitely am a frequent flyer in the dentist chair, which is why we talk about oral health so much, not because it's all about me, but because it's about all of us. And if someone like myself, who's really good about brushing and flossing, and I'm still getting cavities, I want to know what I can do outside of those traditional preventative mechanisms that the dentists are really keen on telling us to do. So,
well, I don't know that the dentists have told us to do anything other than
brush and floss. That's right. Yeah.
And use fluoride.
We had a discussion the other day. It's like, don't eat this. But they don't talk about what to eat, like actual nutrition. You know, it's like, that's missing. Because it's so much more than like what goes on. It's like what goes in your body to create the pH, to create the mineralization or not, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's crazy that they don't talk more about treating the actual infection. I mean, if you as a physician, if somebody came in to visit with you and said, hey, you know what? I have this big bacterial infection on my hand or in my arm. Would you look at it and say, eh? Go lift some weights, make your arm a little stronger to resist it. but in essence,
Yeah.
That's what dentists have been saying about tooth decay for 100 years. Because using fluoride,
good point.
When the dentists talk about using fluoride, all of they're doing is saying this is going to make your enamel more resistant.
Hard.
to the acid that this bacterial infection is causing, it's not going to do anything to the bacterial infection.
Yeah, and you can also end up with too much fluoride in your system in general, causing downstream issues. And yeah, and then the tooth after time becomes so hard, it's brittle.
Yep.
Like, it can be overused. Fluorosis. And then you actually do start having, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So we do have some great alternatives, like you had mentioned, but no one is addressing the bacterial infection. And my dentist here in Seattle talks about that all the time.
About fluoride or something else?
The bacteria.
Oh.
You have to disrupt the bacteria and the biofilm that comes with that. And if you're not interrupting that process, there's no resolve.
Do they give you any products that can do that?
Well, yeah, this is, you know, the hydrogen peroxide sort of mouthwashes he likes to use for sure. And then the flossing to disrupt the microbiome. Those are the big selling points there. The gastrointestinal distress that some people will have if they have a SIBO issue, it seems to be the argument is that my belly doesn't tolerate these sugar alcohols very well. And so then nobody wants to suggest that the xylitol because of that.
Oh, so if people start eating it slowly, like if you start mm-hmm. chewing the gum and then mm-hmm. and start using toothpaste, your body is going to adapt to that faster than you would think. I mean, we're talking mm-hmm. decades ago, they tried using xylitol in a retirement home because people are constipated there, and it worked, but it only worked for a couple of weeks. And then your gut microbiome adapted to it and it didn't work anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Interesting.
And talking about the gut microbiome, your gut microbiome is heavily dependent on your oral and your nasal microbiome.
Absolutely.
I mean, we don't like to talk about this that much, but you know, you eat mm-hmm. a cup and a half of heavily bacteria laden mucus every day. I know that doesn't sound appetizing, but you know, as your nose and all this bacteria that you're breathing in gets cleaned out, that mucus goes into our stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the facts.
all of that bacteria that's in there is going to affect our gut microbiome.
Mm-hmm. It's a highway. That's what my dentist will call it. It's basically a highway. And he actually purports that the number one disease, most common disease in the world, is not heart disease, but first, basically, bacterial infection in the mouth.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even if you go back to 2000, the Surgeon General, I want to say it was Sanger, I think, but in 2000, they had a Surgeon General report that came out. It was over 300 pages talking about the poor state of oral health in the United States and how it was decreasing. Not in a good way. The standard of oral health in the United States was decreasing, going back down. It had been going up until about the mid-80s, mid to late 80s, and then it started going back down. And in 2000, they put out a report, but they missed the boat because what they talked about was drugs, alcohol, tobacco, and I think in the entire paper they mentioned sugar like four times. It was ridiculous.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know, how do they do that? And even in 2021, Vivek Murthy and Francis Collins put out another paper, and what these people are all saying is that if your mouth isn't healthy, there's no way your body is going to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
I will say this. I believe the most important doctor besides yourself, because you are your first doctor, your second most important doctor is your dentist. If, that's a big if, your doctor has all this information that we're talking about right now, because this oral hygiene issue needs to be at the forefront in medicine. And when I was in naturopathic medical school, I don't really feel like we covered this at all, very minimally. And to add to that, I think what's really important is that dentists should be required to take X amount of credits of nutrition and or be have a minor in nutrition, because what we put in our mouth makes a difference. And how are they not able to counsel us on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree, but why limit it to dentists? I think your physicians, your allopaths, your MDs, your DOs, I think they should all be required to have at least a 2-year degree, you know, at least some level of knowledge of nutrition and hygiene, what else would there be? I mean, just those two things right there, hygiene and nutrition and exercising, that's what healthcare is all about. I mean, doctors and people in medicine and healthcare and sick care, they don't like it when I say this that often, but if you look back over the course of human history, the garbage man and the plumbers have saved more lives than all the doctors ever will.
Oh, that's that is right. So true. Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I mean, mm-hmm. we saw from the late 1800s until the late 1900s, the biggest improvement in our standard of living, our quality of life and all of that stuff. And the medical community has taken credit for it. The pharmaceutical industry is all over taking credit for it. But that really isn't what it was. It was really that we were getting clean water piped to our houses and we were getting the trash and the sewage piped away and taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
then the surgical team was washing their hands.
Yeah, exactly. They finally kind of a little late to the game.
That was really late, almost 1990s.
Yeah. It was 1998 when it became standard of care for healthcare providers to wash their hands between sick patients.
Unreal.
That's mind-blowing.
But it's really our drugs that are saving the day.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know if you are familiar with the Semmelweis, because it was in
which one?
Semmelweis.
No,
he's the one who, in 1848, wrote the first paper suggesting that physicians washed their hands with bleach in between working on dead people and working on living people.
I did hear that the women were dying. Yeah, you know, they called him crazy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they called him crazy. They ridiculed him, and he died in an insane asylum a couple of years later. And the reason why is because he couldn't come to grips that the profession, the healthcare profession of educated people, wouldn't even try what he suggested. They just discarded it out of hand. And I mean, and that continues to this day. Mm-hmm. Because our healthcare establishment, our doctors and you know, except for us, you guys, I mean, not us, except for you guys. present company at Tanaka. But they don't talk about hygiene. They don't talk about nutrition.
Yeah, and then when they do talk about quote unquote hygiene, they're actually talking about using toxic things like just rubbing this hand sanitizer on your hand, which destroys your microbiome of your hands, mm-hmm. and their mouthwash with alcohol, like
douching.
Douching. Okay. I almost got New York for a second. Let me hold back. but it's like, okay, here, our form of protecting you, and it's almost like they want to sterilize us. It's just like, that's a deep, dark rabbit hole there.
That's what hygiene is, you know, to your mainstream healthcare provider is it's killing it all. It's making us sterile. Yeah. But yet we aren't. Mm-hmm. We are a big commensal blob of tissue and bacteria and viruses and fungus, I guess.
Protozoa. That's right. Well, we're 10% human as far as DNA goes. There's a book called 10% Human.
Yeah.
So interesting book. So we're not trying to kill off the plethora of organisms in our bodies. We're just, it's all about the ratio, right?
Yep.
And we can see the agenda here with your court case with these guys. Can you tell us where that's at? What's going on?
Well, we finished with discovery. I mean, we've chatted with them. They came in and tried to find out, you know, they asked us all the questions. They had a day with us. We had days with each of them. The court wouldn't let us depose anybody from the CDC, which I was really interested to do, or from the FDA, which I don't know why. I think that they should have allowed us to do that because we really wanted to figure out what was going on. But they're right now, they're at the beginning of expert testimony where, you know, you get a bunch of experts and they come in and, you know, we're sure that the government will get some hired guns that come in and say, yeah, washing your nose doesn't do anything. You know, which, you know, the, you've got thousands of studies showing opposite, but I'm sure that the FTC will find someone that will say, no, it doesn't work. Or what we really think they're going to do is come back and say, it does work, but you have to have a 2 RCT studies to show that it works. Otherwise you can't make a claim, which the FTC has come back on that a bunch of times. And it's interesting because the study about how you look at whether a bacteria or virus attaches to tissue, that's not done through an RCT study. That's done in a Petri dish. You know, you put it in there and then you look at it under a microscope. That's what they do. And we explained that to the FTC, and the FTC actually told us that we don't care. We're telling you, these are the studies we want. We're not your advisors. We're not your counselors. You go get these studies and then you can make the statement. And I said, you don't really show that viruses and bacteria adhere through an RCT study. And they wouldn't listen to it. So it'll be probably 2026 before this sees a court. Unless at some point the judge just says, you know, this is ridiculous, and kicks it out.
Yeah, after they've kind of bled you dry for a while.
Well, I think that the courts are more, I mean, if I didn't think that the courts were in our favor, we probably wouldn't be fighting as much. But I think that the courts, the logic behind what we were saying is completely sound. The science is completely sound. And I think that it's worth the fight because the censorship that the FTC did there, where they stopped all of the companies from sharing information that was on the CDC's webpage, you can make a solid argument that the FTC is at least partially responsible for everybody that died from COVID or everybody that continues to die from COVID after May of 2020. Because that's when they started, you know, censoring it. We knew that the studies showed that just washing and reducing the viral load in the nose, we knew that that worked. It was on the CDC's webpage before that. But yet they weren't sharing it. When we tried to, they came in and censored it. So you could make that argument.
Right. It sounds like just using nasal salt sprays was doing the trick. And then adding the xylitol to it as a biofilm disruptor was even better. And I guess, well, from what I understand on...
Well, hang on, let me explain that. So the studies that they did, we applied to the FDA to do a study and they turned us down. There is a group in the UK that they did do a study. Excuse me. They did it in May and they did it during the Delta wave in India. So arguably the deadliest place at the deadliest time. And it was done with hospital workers that were treating people with COVID. And using a xylitol nasal spray with a 5% solution of xylitol, we use a 10, 3 times a day, reduce the incidence of COVID by 62% above a saline. And we already know that a saline reduces it by a significant amount. Okay. The other compound that they looked at, the iodocarrageenan, they did a study in Argentina where they looked at using an iodocarrageenan nasal spray, again, in hospital workers that were treating patients with COVID. They used it 4 times a day, so every 6 hours, and it showed an 80% reduction in COVID.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the even the preservative that I love that story about the grapefruit seed extract.
Yeah.
How it started as a preservative and then it turns out, whoa, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, all around,
tell us that
you're
story.
Using a product that, that blocks adhesion of bacteria and viruses in your airway and that kills off the viruses.
Will you tell us a story about how you kind of came into the grapefruit seed extract aspect?
Well, we started using grapefruit seed extract in, I want to say 2002 or three. There was a chain of stores in the Denver area, Colorado, called Wild Oats. And they were bought up.
They've
been bought up by Whole Foods. But they came to us and said, we want to carry your product, but we don't want to use the benzyl. We don't want the benzyl conium chloride preservative that you're using because that's what we use because that's what saline used. So we actually switched over to grapefruit seed extract. But in 2020, when we started doing research with our nasal spray in COVID, the very first study we did showed that our nasal spray, you know, annihilated the COVID virus. And we thought, oh, that's great. It must be the xylitol. Turns out it wasn't. We broke it into all the different compounds. We broke it out. We tested oregano oil, tea tree, eucalyptus. We tried the xylitol. And the thing that was actually destroying the virus was a 0.2% solution of grapefruit seed extract annihilates the SARS-CoV-2 virus as effectively as a 70% solution of alcohol.
Oh, wow. How dare you?
I know. I know. It's absurd that our public health agencies aren't talking about it, but you know, the absurdities in this country and these day and ages are just stacking up like cordwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like even just having the hyperosmotic quality of humidity and just getting that sinus cavity more moist was also really effective with humidifiers, for example, even just that.
Yeah. I mean, if you can keep the humidity in your nose or the humidity of the air you breathe at right around 50%, 40 to 60, there's studies that go back decades showing that you're not going to get sick as often. I want to say the guy's name was Arundel or something like that. But he published a paper, again, I want to say it was in the 70s, where if it's really dry, you get more more bacterial infections. And if it's really wet, you get more fungus and viral infections.
That would seem right. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And
yeah, like in Chinese medicine, that would be like excessive dampness. But if it's the other extreme, then that's an issue as well.
Yeah. You know? And so the sweet spot for that is 40 to 60% humidity. And I have humidifiers in my house that, you know, keep the humidity right around 40 to 50% all year long.
Yeah, well, you're in Utah. You need it. When I was living there, I would get nosebleeds. It's so dry. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, just get a humidifier and you're good to go in Utah. It's a gorgeous place. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, if you would, tell us about your products. What products do you have?
Well, we have the Sinus Care products, which are clear. It's spelled X-L-E-A-R. You can pick them up at every CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, everywhere. I mean, they're all your natural retailers, except Whole Foods. We pulled it out of Whole Foods about 5 years ago because they kept wanting to mark it up too much. Then we have the oral care products, which are the spray products. Again, they're all made with xylitol, but it's toothpaste, mouthwash, chewing gum, mints, candy, stuff like that. We also have, and these are, you know, kind of new. They're our newest product. We have cough drops. And it's really interesting. Most of your cough drops are made with sugar. Now, if you have a bacterial infection of your throat and you're sucking on a sugared cough drop, what are you doing?
You're feeding that stuff.
You're feeding it. So why is it that we are still, you know, recommending to people that have a sore throat that they should use a sugared cough drop?
Yeah.
And the thing is, you go into a health food store where they're supposed to be better educated. All of them are sweetened with sugar.
Ours, I almost cannot find one without sugar.
Yeah. Ours is the only one that I know of that is natural and sugar-free.
Cool.
I need to find those. Yeah. Those are awesome. And you don't even need to have a cough to take those. That sounds preventative just in general.
Yeah, yeah. They're just candy. I eat them.
Awesome. So as far as the website goes, can you give us any information on how people can find your products? Or is it more beneficial to just pop on over to a local grocery store, health food store?
Most of your health food stores, except Whole Foods, but most of your grocery stores are going to carry them. But you can go to our website, and I encourage people to go to our webpage because we have a place where they can go. Any studies that we reference when we're talking, there's a link to it on our webpage.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I could go off for days on the oral care side of things because that's where the vast body of science is behind xylitol. But The first thing you want to do is find products with xylitol. Hopefully you're using Spry because those are the best, obviously, because they're ours. And just use them.
Nice. I won't mention the other gum name because we're not here to talk about them, but I have used that one as well.
Oh, man.
Okay, I didn't say their name.
it's good. I mean, I'm, yeah, I want people to use Spry, but you know what I want more? Is I want people to be healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that anything we do to get away from the sorbitol that is in most of your toothpaste and most of your sugar-free gum. The crazy part of it is sorbitol is a 6-carbon sugar alcohol. It feeds the strep mutans bacteria.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's what's in most toothpaste.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's all ADA approved.
Well, gosh, we're standing by your side, my friend.
You're doing good work, man.
We're looking forward to see how this goes and how this, you know, unfolds for you. And, you know, anytime we bring anybody on, it's because we believe in their mission and it's a shared mission with us. So we're excited to see how this goes and we're rooting for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on today, Nathan.
Yeah. Bless
Anytime.
You.
Anytime.
Thank right. you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.